From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made at retirement ceremonies every day and in every city. Someone is retiring after 20 years, or 30 years, maybe 50 years in the same office. But new statistics show that staying in the same job with the same employer is becoming increasingly unlikely for a range of reasons. Writing for Balanced Careers Online, Allison Doyle writes, quote, "The old ideal of retiring after 40 years with one company, taking home a pension and a gold watch, is fading into the past. For many reasons, more Americans are changing jobs several times throughout their careers," end quote. Doyle points to surveys showing a declining number of American workers who think their employer is loyal to them. Today, nearly half of American workers do not believe their employer is loyal. If you're under the age of 35, on average, you won't hold your current job for more than 3 years. Wages have stagnated. You can massage the wage picture if you want to. For example, wages in the spring of 2019 were higher than they'd been at any point since 1964, adjusted for inflation. That's good. But if you remove the top 1%, average wages for the other 99% plummet because so much wealth is concentrated at the top. So what happens when workers who are struggling to make more money, who don't feel their bosses are loyal, try to relaunch themselves into new industries? Studies indicate that job retraining generally has poor results. Workers face a great deal of anxiety about trying to reestablish themselves in new careers, particularly when they're past their 20s or 30s. This hour, we talk about that process with people who have done it. And I want to make one point at the outset of the hour here. There's a lot of reasons people do this. And in some ways, we're talking to a privileged set here. People in this room are lucky enough that we've been able to do this. And a lot of workers feel the necessity and don't feel like there's a lot of options. So I know there's a range of experience here. Part of what we're talking about is sort of a subset of workers who can afford to, even if it's not always easy. No one's saying it's always easy, but I want to be sensitive to the fact that there is a range of experience. In studio with us is my old colleague at 13WM. You're not old, you're old colleague. You're a young person. Norma Holland is a former journalist. Began a new career at a digital marketing company called Digital Hive. When? How many months ago now was
it? I started in September, and here we are in February.
Coming up on 6 months soon.
Yeah, it's been great. I have loved it. I've not looked back. It's been a wonderful experience.
Well, nice to have you here.
Thank you, friend.
Also with us is Mike Johansson, who's a former journalist, began a new career as a lecturer at the Rochester Institute of Technology, along with some of the many other things that you do on the side. When did you do that, by the way?
I started in August of 2009.
And so you're well over a decade now.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for being here. Kathleen Pringle is a premier career management strategist and coach at the Kathleen Pringle Group. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Tell us about the group. What is it that you do?
Terrific. I and my team of, say, 20, who are a flex team spread around the country, work with senior professionals and executives who want to navigate change, and whether that's within their companies or to make a transition.
What are you seeing right now, sort of compared to 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago?
Average job tenure is only 4 years and falling, much like what you just spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this is a trend line, what we're finding is that the average person has several jobs and several careers. It used to be a couple of jobs and maybe one or two careers, but really, it's 11 jobs and 3 to 6 careers that the people coming into today's workforce are going to see. And so the thing is, if you're an experienced professional, you're going to be part of that.
Well, and so listeners, if you want to join the conversation with your thoughts on having to change jobs or really careers, and we'll kind of distinguish in a moment what we mean by that. But if you want to share your stories on the challenges of doing that, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're at Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. And I've got this desk is a mess today. I've got so much, just a stack of information about what has changed over the years here. Mike Johansson, it was a different time for you. I mean, Norma changes 10 years after you do, and a lot changed in the country. But 2009, we got to remember, we're coming off a pretty tough financial crunch. So why don't you take us through your work story and why you decided to make that change in 2009?
Well, it was sort of forced on me, working for a large media company that in 2008 laid off 1,500 number divisional and business number twos across the country. So suddenly in August of 08, I find I don't have a job.
How long had you been there?
20 years and 5 or 6 months.
Okay, in Rochester.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I've been in journalism for about 27 years altogether.
And so when that happens, given the fact that, we know now if you're in journalism, particularly if you're in print, look, colleagues, we feel for you. You feel like every 6 months you may get a call. Was it really like that throughout the aughts? What did it feel like? Every 2-3 years you might get a call on that, or was that...
No, it really picked up. I mean, what brought it to my attention was in 2006, I was part of a national executive training program, the future big bosses in the company kind of thing. And they started with 18 of us in this national program. By the end of the year, there were only 14. Four of them had lost their positions, which pretty much told me where things were going. So from there on, I started trying to come up with a plan B and a plan C. And I think, print journalism was in trouble already. The recession really exacerbated that. Just the drop in advertising revenue meant that newspapers just had to let go a lot of people.
To which it has not recovered and probably won't.
Right.
As sort of journalism reinvents. But when it happened in 09 for you, was it a shock all the same? Or did you think, now this is going to happen eventually?
I'd been expecting it to come, honestly. The saying about when you're a number two, you're pretty dispensable. My sort of hope was this executive development program. I'd been looking at various other positions where I would be a number one in a division. For various reasons, those hadn't worked out. And so, I sort of had a feeling.
Do you remember the day when how you found out?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They announced there were going to be 15 RIFs, reduction in force, on that Monday. And I thought, I wonder if this is the day. And it got to be like 4:30 in the afternoon. No call. 4:45, I get a call from HR and I go down and I realize they do it in sort of a reverse pecking order. In other words, the more senior you are, they leave you till last. Mm-hmm. So I walk in and there's three corporate VIPs there, VPs, vice presidents. So I pretty much know what's about to happen, And they didn't want to get rid of me, but they offered me an entry level position in a different department, which I pretty much took as an insult.
And a massive pay cut it would have been.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. When you walk in that office on your way down the hall, do you know what's coming?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so how quickly did you pivot to thinking about what you could do next? I mean, it sounds like you had been thinking about it for some time.
Well, I actually was there was literally almost a year between the time that happened and the time I started at RIT. Mm-hmm. So I did a bunch of other things, and one of which was go hunt around for people to help me, and Kathleen happened to be someone that came highly recommended. First thing I did was I had a sailboat at the time, and I went sailing every single day for a month, which was glorious.
Wow.
This is what I'm talking about when I say there's a range of experience.
Yeah, all right.
I hear Christopher Cross in the background.
Yeah.
Sailing.
I freely admit I was very privileged at the time.
World needs more Christopher Cross. Yeah. That is for sure.
But anyway, so I started a consultancy in social media, and that's what I was doing and building up at the time when RIT called looking for faculty because they suddenly had a need.
Okay. Now, again, this is 2009 here, and it strikes me, Kathleen, that if you're a worker in sort of Mike's situation, which is that maybe if you can, you're going to stay in that job with that company for your entire career,
mm-hmm.
but you also know that realistically, there is a chance of sort of waves of layoffs that may come at various times. It sounds to me like Mike was preparing for that eventuality to at least give himself a cushion, more so than a lot of workers who are thinking, well, I'll just be here forever. How important is it to sort of get your head around what you might do if that call comes?
Okay, so my first response to you would be that if you're not managing your career, who is, right? And like you'd said earlier, times have changed, and it's different than walking in the door and then expecting your employer to take care of you in exchange for being loyal. So, the world has changed. We need to adapt, and we need to continue to grow, because if we're not growing, we're dying. And so we need to ever evolve. And part of that is about constantly taking inventory of our interests, our skills, our values. And this is at every level of career. So the fact that Mike shared that, he kind of had a sense, because I happen to know Mike is that guy who can stay, on top of the trees and look at things strategically and be able to understand, like, gee, if I just follow the trend, then I need to be able to understand, like, where's the cheese moving? I got to skate to where the puck is, if you will. And so, you know, it just underscores the point that, you know, even smart, motivated, talented, productive professionals, whether they get IRFed. Involuntary reduction in force, like you had said.
Which, by the way, don't you love how the employment industry has all of these terms for just fired or laid off?
Yes.
You're an IRF. You know, you're an efficiency.
Yes.
Are we human beings?
Well, and
not
again,
really.
We are cogs and machines.
And
baby.
So the better way around that is to talk about how your function was eliminated, but of course, by virtue of your function being eliminated, then you are eliminated. And so if that makes someone feel better, okay. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, most people, and especially because we're living longer and it's important as humans that we have a purpose, that we really be able to continually renew mm-hmm. and regenerate and really understand how to parlay our interests and our experiences into those newer things and not allow an absence of understanding to get in the way of wanting to continue to explore.
Mike, when you were kind of preparing for that, how much did you think about not only working for the potential of working for one employer for most of your career or all of your career, but also the way that some of us kind of tie identity to work? I mean, did you think about, I'm not going to be a journalist anymore? I mean, you think of yourself, and we all think of ourselves in certain ways here. How much did that come into your mind?
Truthfully, in my case, it didn't a lot because...
It's because you're not an American. I mean, you are an American now, but not by birth.
Yeah.
We have this weird thing here.
Yeah, maybe that's true. But, you know, truthfully, in the 6 months or so that led up to what eventually would be my position being eliminated, I was literally, while out sailing, thinking about what kinds of things could I do that would both be fulfilling and likely get me paid. And those are not necessarily, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And something that came back to me was a former mentor of mine, a former publisher, had sort of said that I was just someone who had a lot of really good ideas. And that, you know, there are companies out there that employ people who just sit around coming up with really good ideas. And I thought, you know, if I could get a job like that, that would be ideal. And so I started looking around about what kind of jobs, you know, where do people sit around just coming up with good ideas, you know, ideation, kind of stuff like that. And Kathleen will probably talk at some point about this thing called Strengths Finders, which is a book and a program that she suggested I do. And I did it. My top five skills, number one was ideation. And so, you know, that reinforced the idea that I should do something where ideas are important, coming up with new ideas, new ways to do things, new ways to solve problems. So that was always sort of kicking around. And I started to look at things like marketing agencies and advertising agencies and, to some extent, this sounds kind of odd, but there was sort of a bit of a growing trend at the time where architecture firms were hiring people who were just ideators.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what, that'd be fun. So I started looking into that, but I, you know, hadn't done a whole lot when the call came.
You were very open though to a change in career, and you know, I joked that it's because you were an American born, but I mean, you know, look, you're from Australia,
New Zealand, but that's okay.
It's the same thing.
He just does that to bug me
every time. By the way,
every time.
Every time. Australia, New Zealand, same thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So, but you're from New Zealand, and I don't. This is me a generalization, but I am curious to know if you think there is a difference in your observation with the way Americans sort of associate work with identity versus what you've seen maybe in other places.
Well, I think there is a basic difference in the way people look at life. So I think there's sort of a saying in New Zealand that the can-do attitude is a New Zealand thing because for so long it was so far from everywhere. If something broke, you had to learn how to fix it.
On your own, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you just had to, the can-do was like something breaks down, you fix it. You don't know how to do something, teach yourself. So I think there may be some of that.
Yeah, I mean, like you meet somebody at a party here and you go, oh, so what do you do?
Right.
You know, not tell me about yourself or you know, whatever the case may be. How long have you lived here? It's what do you do?
It's a social
question.
Status thing.
Yeah, it's a defining question. And look, I know that they ask that in other places, but just about everybody you talk to who's not American born will tell you that is pretty amplified here.
Yeah, that and perfect teeth. Those are two defining American characteristics.
See, we go in such interesting directions here. Before I turn to Norma Holland for her story there, on the
like
subject
chief,
of
Mike.
Yeah. On the subject of strength finders.
Yeah.
So there's a guy who's written a bunch of books and got a $1 million book contract, even though he doesn't read books. His name is Gary Vaynerchuk, and Gary is sort of a social media influencer. He kind of rose up through the ranks of his family's wine business in New Jersey and became sort of an online salesman. And you know, I've met Gary. The issue I have with Gary is he is a force of nature, but he sort of tells everybody who will listen in his really sort of simple books, you know, just do what you love, do it better than anybody else, and you make a lot of money. I think that's oversimplified. But I do think it sounds like the notion of strength finders is the more sort of serious academic look at, well, what are your strengths and can we find somewhere for you to work where that can be lucrative or at least can make you money? Yeah?
Yes. So let me just give you a really quick.
Yeah.
So Marcus Buckingham and Donald Clifton were the original authors of Strengths Finder. And they were part of Gallup at the time. Don Clifton has since passed on, but he's considered the father of strength psychology. And what they did is they went out and talked to 3 million people across the world, and they really wanted to understand three things. You know, innate ability, acquired skill, and developed knowledge. And it's the combination of those three things that they were able to figure out there's 32 different themes or strengths that we all have, and we actually all lead with 5 of them. Just like you pick up a pen with your right or your left hand, we all lead with 5, and it doesn't mean the other 29.
What are some examples then?
So, like Mike had mentioned ideation, or they had mentioned, there's an achiever strength, the person who has ultimate perseverance, that person who's a learner, who's got innate curiosity and wants to really understand things. Context is another strength where people really want to understand how did we get here, you know, the backdrop. And then includer, relator, strategic. But again, we've got these strengths, and it doesn't mean that the other 29 of the 32 are weaknesses. It just means that, you know what, those 5 things are the things that you do without even thinking about it. Without, you know, you do it as easily as you breathe. And so this assessment, I find, is extremely valuable, especially with senior professionals and executives such as Norma and Mike, where, you know, we've got all of this acquired knowledge. And so what do? You know, to be able to redirect your energy, be able to scan for new opportunity, identify new skills, you have to lead with something. So it's like, let's lead with strength, so that we can then develop opportunities and parlay competence around those things.
It seems like it worked for you pretty well, Mike.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, my 5, I was stunned. Kathleen and I were laughing about this before the show. I thought it was kind of a load of rubbish, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of these things, you know, take this personality test and discover why, you know, you could be a millionaire. That kind of, it's not me. But but I bought the book and I took the test and it came out and I looked at my 5 and it was like, wow, that really is me.
And is this like one of those tests where it's like, what are your biggest weaknesses? I'm too honest. I'm too good looking.
No.
It's really not.
It's uncomfortable to be out in public.
They ask you all. It's sort
they
like,
really want to identify them.
Yeah, and they ask all kinds of these questions. You know, Kathleen can probably explain it better, but they ask questions that you have no idea why they're asking that question. Huh. You just answer them honestly, and then at the end of it, they use you. You get a thing through the mail. You get a PDF of it. It's fabulous.
Go ahead. You want to jump in?
Well, I just wanted to say that I had mentioned that Don Clifton had passed on, and so when he did, Marcus Buckingham left Gallup, went off on his own, took Clifton's grandson, and then they developed another book called Strengths Finder 2.0. And it was more about the application of your strengths. It's one thing to understand what they are, but another thing to be able to apply them. And so what they did is they said, in 2.0, we're going to give every strength, not just, you know, a readout of what it is, but we're going to give you 10 ideas for how to implement and actualize those strengths. And if you happen to be a manager who has people with those strengths on your team, this is how you can bring those strengths to the team.
What were your 5, by the way?
I knew you'd ask, so I wrote them down, because I remember the top 3, but I couldn't remember 5. So they were, in from first to last, ideation,
yep.
Which, you know, I think. I can't read my handwriting now, so. All right.
Dr. Johansson,
yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Ideation, learner, context, achiever, includer.
Includer.
Go ahead, Kathleen.
An includer is somebody who really wants to make certain that nobody is left out, is making certain that everybody who is part of something, mm-hmm. whether it's of unequal contribution, but that's what they do, is they are that person who's very inclusive as opposed to exclusive.
That's a great quality to have as a person to begin with. So very cool. So you're able to use this. It's gone pretty well for you.
Yeah.
Pretty happy with the last decade of your life?
Absolutely. I mean, teaching at RIT, I mean, I couldn't be more grateful for the opportunity, but you know, I'm literally in a position as a learner where I learn something every day. It's a rare day when I don't learn something from a student, students, faculty, somebody. It's fabulous. It sort of enriches me. And the other thing, as I explained to Kathleen before the show again, was I get to do a little bit of something new almost all the time. And that's what energizes me. If I was doing the same thing month in, month out, year in, year out, I get bored very quickly. So I'm doing a whole bunch of cool stuff now, too. So.
Well, let me read a little bit as I turn to Norma Holland, because Mike talked about, you know, the importance of feeling stimulated. This, I'm going to read this, but this sort of feels like, to me, from a bit of a different time in American history, and it was April 2016. So just before the last election, this piece in the Atlantic Monthly was called Quit Your Job. Mm-hmm. A midlife career shift can be good for cognition, well-being, and even longevity. And I'll read from that piece now. According to Gallup pollsters, only one-third of baby boomers and Gen Xers are engaged by their work. Jim Harder, Gallup's chief scientist for workplace management and well-being, says about half of boomer and Gen X employees fall in a second category that Gallup characterizes as not engaged. As Harder puts it, quote, they show up, they get their paycheck, and they do the minimum required, end quote. And one out of five belongs in the category Gallup calls actively disengaged, which Harder describes as a pretty desperate state. This situation exacts a toll on more than just productivity. Gallup has found that, compared with engaged employees, actively disengaged workers of all ages are far likelier to report stress and physical pain. They have higher cortisol levels and blood pressure, and they are nearly twice as likely to be diagnosed with depression or to call in sick to work. All right, that's from the Atlantic piece. And what the piece essentially says is changing, forcing yourself to change when inertia is sort of the natural state. If you can make that change, it could be good for your cognition, your well-being, feeling stimulated. The reason it feels like a different time is a lot of workers now feel like, I don't have a choice. I got laid off. They called me into the office. I didn't make the choice. You did make the choice. You were at 13 WAM and such a public face in this community for a long time. I'm curious to know what drove your decision to change.
Well, there was a number of factors, and you know, it's been, 6 months since I left Channel 13, so I've had some time to sort of debrief myself, mm-hmm. right? Like, I never really sat down and thought about it critically, and there was a couple factors, and I would say that chief among them was actual exhaustion. I think we, you know, it was one of that. It was, and Evan, you know, this was sort of the dirty little secret of morning TV that no one ever wanted to talk about. You know, you're exhausted, and all you're thinking about is your next nap.
Yep.
I always used to say I didn't have the bandwidth mentally or even physically to have higher level thought, to do the work that Kathleen said, mm-hmm. to do that self assessment. People used to ask me, "What do you like to do? What do you like to do, Norma?" And I'd say, "Sleep." You know what I mean? I didn't have the mental just wherewithal to come up with a change. It was only when it just got to be unbearable, when the physical exhaustion in the afternoon that left me unable to be there as present as I wanted to be in my life, it forced me to say, I can't do this anymore. I absolutely cannot do this anymore. There were other factors, though, that were very important. Among them, lack of stimulation. I was doing the same thing every day. Now, one could say, well, maybe it's on you, Norma, to then, you know, it's on you to switch it up, right? Maybe you, and I kept thinking I couldn't find a way to change what I was doing. I wanted a different time slot, another part of the day to do what I wanted to do. There wasn't that ability. And I just thought, okay, I would love to change, but I can't do it on this shift anymore. Mm-hmm. I have to switch. there was that. And, you know, there just wasn't room for me anywhere else. I mean, that's the bottom. That's also partly the reason.
Yeah.
You know, Evan, I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, people have been there. Childer team people stay a long time. And that's what makes it so successful, right? That's part of what makes that station be so successful at what it does. But there was nowhere to go. And I had to come to terms with that. It was stay on the morning show or what, right?
Which, if I could just interject here to make sure I think we're on the same page
yes,
here.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I don't hear any animus at Channel 13 over that. I mean, there's a lot of people who have been there and have
sure.
stayed there because
yeah.
it's been a great place to work.
Absolutely.
And you know, but the reality is when you look at the stats, especially for people, when you see under the age of 35, 2.8 years is the average tenure of job
sure.
for
mm-hmm.
people under the age of 35 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Kathleen read some other stats just in terms of how much turnover there is. My assumption is, and Kathleen can speak about this in a moment, if you are at a place for longer than 3 years, longer than 5 years, longer than 10 years, your expectation and your hope is to grow within that company. And
yes.
I think the best managers are finding paths for people to grow. And, you know, realistically, it was, I know as your friend and as your coworker there for many years, it was tough to find that because that just wasn't necessarily reality. Not necessarily it wasn't the employer's fault, but
no.
there are all these factors in play.
Yeah.
And I saw you as tired as you were. You had two beautiful young girls, and you're thinking about all of those different factors.
Yeah, and I don't begrudge, and I should be very blunt, I don't begrudge my former employer about that at all. Let me be
right.
very, very clear.
Yeah.
You know, that was my home. Is where I became an adult. It is where my friends are. I still count among, you know, my former coworkers, I count them as my friends. So, no, it was just the reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like looking at something and saying, well, it's black or it's white,
yeah,
right? And
yeah.
so I looked at the situation and I said, okay, well, what are you going to do, right? So I decided to, and because, you know, again, Evan, and I know this is not the situation for everyone. I had a friend who had been in touch with me for several years, Jeff Knaus, who is co-founder of Digital Hive. And he said to me one day, you know, I'd love for you to work with us. And I just thought, I don't even know what you do. What is this digital what? Digital marketing? Like, you know, it was like the furthest thing. I mean, I was a broadcaster. I wasn't, you know, digital marketing is the total opposite. It's like finding niche audiences, right? So I was scared. Could I switch identity? Could I stop seeing myself as Norma Holland from 13 Women, right? Like, could I stop, right, in my own head? And so there was that fear, right? What am I going to do? Is it going to work? What if I start the job and I hate it, right? What if I really don't do well at it? I mean, quite frankly, what if I suck, right? What if it's not what I thought it was? So there was all this fear, but I just said, you know what, Norma, bet on yourself. I'll be honest, you get to a certain age and you start to say to yourself, if I don't switch now, when am I going to do it?
Right.
Right? The girls are small, okay? And I have a supportive family who are still healthy and well. Well, what are you waiting for?
Some serious advantages there.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And that
yeah.
and now I was able to squeak out that level of thought. And mm-hmm. and then I just jumped. Literally, I jumped. I jumped. And I haven't regretted it.
Well, so I want to explore a little bit about this identity question.
Yes.
Because as I mentioned with Mike, I mean, this is a country where work is, for so many people, work is identity. And it's even more so when you're in the public eye because people see you. I mean, they probably still see you. How many times now do people stop you and still say to you, 6 months after you left Channel 13, I watch you every morning?
I was speaking to a potential client yesterday. And just before we did our proposal, he brought it up. And it was a really cute moment. He was very gracious about it. And I kind of chuckled and I said, okay, you know. But you know, and that doesn't bother me. Let's be very clear also. I never really thought of myself as, you know, the TV lady. Like, that was not my identity.
No, you've always been the same person everywhere you are.
I can't have that. You go to my house and
I
mom
know.
And dad do not let me have that.
No, I know. No,
they're like,
know.
Yeah, okay, TV lady. Go take out the trash.
Yeah.
You know?
That's the
whatever,
best.
TV lady.
The best. But at the same time, when the public knows you,
yes.
it sort of cements in you this notion when you've been doing it for years. Along with having known you, you know, I know it wasn't an easy choice for you, and you thought about it for a number of years because you could, for a while, still see yourself growing within that company.
Oh, yeah.
You could have stayed there your whole career.
That was my initial thought.
Yeah.
I thought maybe I can just reinvent myself within the confines of this company, right? Within these four walls, so to speak. But that just wasn't possible. You know what I mean? And I couldn't take it personally. right? Like, at first you could say, well, there's just not room for you. There's not room for you, right? And it can, you could take it personally. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, nah, I'm not going to take it personally. I'm not going to go there. You know, the public is tough enough on people who are on television. The last thing I'm going to do is then beat myself up, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when I left, I thought, you know what? There's a lot to learn from this experience. I'm not learning it just yet because I'm literally just walking out the door. But let me get, you know, let me get my feet under me. And then I want to help people. I want to show them through example that it can be done. It may not be easy. I spoke at a yoga conference last Saturday. An organization called Hike Yoga had a day of, you know, women getting together. It was full of empowerment. And here I am. I neither hike nor do yoga. And I'm the keynote speaker. There were so many people who came up to me and just said, okay, how did you do it, right? How do you make that switch? Like, voluntarily. You're not being told you don't have a job. You're walking out the door. Mm-hmm. How do you do it? What do you set in place so that when that day comes, you're not scrambling for what to do next? Right. Well, I said, well, make sure you have a job first, okay? Or, you know, are on the path to getting a new one.
Or you've done the work. Give yourself a cushion, right.
Yes. Right. You've given yourself a financial cushion, or you've done the work, like work with someone like Kathleen, to give you a better sense of who you are and what you have to offer. You know, I took those tests, those personality tests too, right? Where they tell you what you're good at, what you could possibly do. And I thought about doing a completely other career that I have not really ever talked about. But this job, working for this company, Digital Hive, afforded me a lifestyle that I'd never had before. So it wasn't like, you know, oh, you're making so much more money, or it's a big position, a big title. I wasn't after that. I wanted to have a life, like a full life that included being with my children and my husband and my family in a way that I couldn't before. I wanted a job that preserved my health. You know, I'm an older mother by choice. You know, I want to be around for my kids.
Right.
Am I going to be so burnt out and sick that I can't even be there for them?
So let me just follow up with one more point here.
Yes.
And then we're going to work in some listener feedback. And Kathleen, I want to get your take on what you're hearing from Norma. Listeners, as we talk about reinventing or relaunching careers, starting with an entirely new line of work in the middle of your lifetime, when you thought maybe you'd do one thing for your whole career, your whole life, it can be daunting. It's 844-295-TALK if you want to call the program, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. If you would have listed your fears before you knew that you were going to leave, what would have been number one? What was the biggest fear?
My biggest fear was, am I going to be able to let go of my identity? Yeah, I worked so hard to get where I was, Evan. You know, I really did. I worked so hard. I worked, you know, the crappy hours. I did the crappy assignments. I did, you know, I took the abuse from the public. But I also, you know, but I loved the people. Mm-hmm. Like, I loved the community that was wonderful. And the community aspect of my job is what I really miss the most.
So letting go of that.
Yeah, letting go. Could I do that? Like, how much of a hit is that going to take? How much of a hit is my ego going to take?
Sure.
And it was actually the simplest thing for me to let go.
So here's why I asked.
Yeah.
If you would have listed your fears, and that would have been number one, 6 months roughly into the new line of work, how much did your number one fear turn out not to be a big deal?
Not even an issue. I mean it. Hmm. It was like as soon as I drove off the lot, I let it go. I mean, like the Frozen song, you know, from the movie, Let It Go. I mean, I did. It was the first thing I let go. Because to be quite honest with you, I don't even know how much I bought into that myself, right? The other people were telling me what I was for right. So many years.
That's interesting.
Kathleen, and by the way, can I just say, if you're not looking and taking control of your career, who is? Wow, that's so profound. Who is? And when you stop to think about who is with the marionette strings...
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get worried. Am I going to offend somebody? Is this the, you know, maybe it's not the right time?
Can I tell you what else I felt? Being a Latina in television in Rochester, there's not that many of us. So, of course, I felt like, am I letting my community down? I'm being really honest here. Yeah. I'm being very, you know, I felt like, am I letting people down?
That representation matters and you know it.
It does. Yeah. It does matter. And I felt like, am I letting my people down? Am I letting people down?
That's a lot of weight on one person, though.
It is, but I carried it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, there's that. And I no longer feel that way.
So we're talking to Norma Holland, who made a choice to switch careers. Mike Johansson, who did not, but switched and essentially sort of that, well, I wouldn't call it midlife, who knows,
maybe it was midlife if I'm lucky.
Early third of life, whatever. Kathleen Pringle is a premier career management strategist and coach at the Kathleen Pringle Group. And what we're talking about is that need to relaunch careers that a lot of Americans don't have a choice about, or at least feel that stress about, because wages have stagnated in a lot of places. A lot of workers, nearly half of American workers now, according to various surveys, do not feel that their employer is loyal to them, and they'd like to change that. But making that change, particularly when you're over the age of 30, especially when you're over 40 or 50 or 60, can be really, really hard. And we're going to get some of your feedback on the other side of this only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about the Oscars that are on the way. We talk movies, the best films of the year, the most overrated, who will win, who should win, and whether Hollywood is doing any better when it comes to representation on screen and at the awards. All things Oscars. Next hour on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get Matt in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Evan. Great conversation you have with your guest today. I think that a huge reason why a lot of people probably don't leave their jobs, even though they want to, is first, they probably can't. They need that paycheck. And second, they have families and they have a health care plan that's tied to their employment.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious, not so much NPR, but the media in general hasn't given, I mean, this is an important topic, and there's a presidential candidate that's going to be on tonight who, like, this is his platform, talking about giving people $1,000 a month.
Andrew
so they
Yang,
can pursue you've said things online, and you've said positive things about him, but I don't get, like, why more people aren't getting it. I don't know. Yeah. I'll listen to your comments, I guess.
Yeah, Matt, thanks for the phone call. So let me just sort of clarify a couple of points there. I don't know if I said positive or negative things. I mean, I just try to analyze, I mean, as a journalist. But we have talked about Andrew Yang on this program multiple times. We did a full hour on UBI, Universal Basic Income, in which Yang, as a presidential candidate, is analyzing the impact of automation, among other sort of disruptive factors, on the American job front. And he says, we are at a time where we maybe need to rethink how people live and how people can rely on having an income. So that has definitely gained more traction in the last year than I have ever seen since starting to talk about UBI years ago. And I think that's a fair point, Matt. But when Matt talks about it, and I'll ask Kathleen, I'll ask all three of our guests to respond to Matt's point that, you know, he needs the health care. He doesn't feel, even if he wants to, that he could walk out today. I get that. And that's why I've really tried to qualify this conversation. There's a lot of layers here. Mm-hmm. Not everybody can do what Norma did. Mm-hmm. And not everybody can sort of pivot as successfully or easily. I'm not saying it was easy, but what Mike did. I mean, that's really, really hard. What would you say to Matt's point that I'm not there right now? I can't make that decision right now.
Right. And I would tell you that what's next is a question that we all have to answer more frequently. Not just, in some cases, having the courage to ask it of ourselves, but it's really about being able to, you know, come up with answers. And if you really are feeling stuck, you know, there may not be another option. Like with Norma, there wasn't another place for her to be able to grow and move to. So, you know, we all have assets, we all have strengths, we all have interests, and what we don't all have is networks. We have networks inside of our companies, but those are not necessarily going to serve us. So, you know, as human beings, we all want to blend and belong and relate, and so we need to be able to, with the help of somebody or because you know yourself, be able to start having that ability to ask that question about, what do you think I could do with my experience? Mm-hmm. And that is the beginning. Like, you know, Norma had mentioned that Jeff had talked to her and said, gee, we'd love to have you join us, which is different than saying, gee, let me put that out there and ask. But without introspection and discovery, we're going to stay where we are. And then, of course, if you're not managing that, then you're going to find yourself on the outside. So it's really, really important that we evolve and continue to recognize that if an income is important. What about that is important? I always ask clients to stack rank in order of importance, and it changes depending on where somebody's at in their career. What's most important? Is it title? Is it income, compensation? Is it the stability of the company or the industry? Or is it really about the challenge of the role? And, you know, frankly, the more mature people are, it becomes about the challenge and less about the income all the time. They'd rather work with their tribe, people who they have shared values with, and doing work where they can learn and grow as opposed to and taking a pay cut.
Would you say that regardless of where you are in your career, what you think is next, it's worth asking yourself, if I had to turn somewhere next, what would I do and what would that look like?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
It's hard for a lot of people to do.
It is. It is. And so you don't have to do it alone, though. There are so many safe places, even, you know, we always say that, you know, the web, but there are so many places on the web. And, you know, we haven't really talked about any of the online platforms, but, you know, LinkedIn is the blue suit database of the world. And if you are a professional, you must have a presence there. It's just not even negotiable. It's just part of your brand and being able to be known and visible. That's the other thing, too. So, you know, inside of LinkedIn, basic membership is free. You can belong to groups. And you don't have to be a first-degree connection to anybody to be able to communicate to them and with them inside of a group. And that's a very safe place to go ask for insight and perspective.
Mike Johansson, what would you say to Matt, especially his comment about feeling like now is not a time where I can make a change even if I wanted to?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely appreciate that position. But and I was very fortunate. You know, I got a severance package of, you know, 20 weeks of pay, so I had a cushion. You know, and again, I'm very privileged that way. But to Kathleen's point, you know, when I started thinking about a plan B and a plan C, I think what made me, what the impetus for me was, I don't want to do nothing. I want to, you know, it's far too early. I'm a long, long way from retirement. So what would a job that would be fulfilling and satisfying, and bring me an income, not necessarily the income I had, but would pay the bills, what would that look like? And, you know, I think that's why I was in a better place than some others, you know, who were let go at the same time.
Well, I'm reading some of the feedback on Norma's Twitter feed. Andrea, who's not the Andrea who's related to you, by the way. I just want to clarify, because sometimes we associate you with your doppelganger.
Yeah. The kinder, gentler Holland.
Different Andrea says, I wish I had Norma's courage. Making a career change after so long is brave. I've been at my current job for 16 and a half years and in my field for 23. Sometimes I wish I could make a change. I'm just too scared.
I get that.
Been there.
Yeah. I always tell people, oh, you know, I may not have looked like I was scared, you know, but my hands were trembling. Right. I think Kathleen's advice to round out your network, you figure out who you know. Think about the people you know who might have a good idea for you, right? Maybe you can't work with someone like Kathleen. Maybe it's just not in the cards right now. Okay. Well, then you know what? You know people. Go ask people. You know, what am I good at? Or what do you think? Or you know, or start to network. And I was, again, I'm such a big proponent for networking. You never know. My father used to say for years, and this is, you know, one of the old sayings, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Mm-hmm. And I always hated that. Because I say, oh, but that negates, you know, hard work, Dad. That negates knowledge and the seeking of knowledge. He goes, Norma. This is John Holland talking to you here. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And to some degree, that's true. I don't always agree with him, but I think that's true. You go out and network, right? Talk to people. You don't just live in your little bubble, right?
Well, you know, who you know will gain you access, but then it's up to you, right?
Boom.
It's up to
Boom.
You.
Yep.
And so I certainly didn't coin this phrase, but it's been said. Jeffrey Gittimer is a world-renowned sales trainer, and he talks all the time about your network is your net worth. And it's, you know, where you will have visibility. It's where you can have connection. It's where there is opportunity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, along the lines of sales, same thing goes with network, job search, transition, discovery. The fortune is in the follow-up. So readiness is the precursor to change. So even taking that first step to just inquire, it doesn't mean you're going to make a change. But just being willing to ask that question, what could be next? Instead of what is next, what could be next? And then, you know, talking to people in your universe who you feel safe with to say, you know, what do you think are some of my unique abilities? How I do things, what I do best? What do you count on me for? What five words would you use to describe me? We don't usually walk around and ask those questions, mm-hmm. but we get so wrapped up in, like what Mike was saying, you know, here in the U.S., it's part of our culture. You know what? It's like what you do instead of who you are. And when I work with clients, teach them, you know, and talk about how are you going to respond to that question? Tell me about yourself. When they say, well, I'm an engineer, I go, oh, stop. I said, you just answered a different question. You just told me what you do. That does not tell me who you are. Because if that's all you are, you're not going to compete and move through this process. Because we're bringing our whole selves to work today.
Let me read a few more comments from listeners. Mary Beth, MB, says, at 40, I changed careers mainly because of quality of life. Being self-employed, I could not do it without the support of my husband. Scary, but in the end, it was the best thing I ever did. 15 years later, I wonder what my next chapter is. Always learning and growing keeps us young. Kind of goes back to Kathleen's point. If you're in that position, and it's a position of privilege, where you've got support, whether it's family helping raise kids when you're going to change your hours, or a supportive husband, as MB says, you know, if you've got that opportunity, it's amazing what it can do to challenge yourself. Because the easiest thing to do is sort of the same.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing. I'm not criticizing. We've all been there. But
I feel if you can stay at a career for a long time and you keep reinventing and challenging yourself, that's awesome.
Within that career.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
What a blessing.
No, there's
good
no
for
question.
You.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's a great point. I mean, like, I hope nobody listening who's been in the same place for 30 years is
no.
What's it, like, no, there's a lot of people envious of having that opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's a comment for Evan and Norma from Chuck Samuels.
Hey, Chuck.
Chuck's our old boss over at 13. He's not old. He's just the boss.
Oh.
Chuck says, hated to lose either one of you, but always respect people willing to take a risk. You positioned yourselves to succeed at something different, which takes guts. Too many people stick with the safe option.
Well, that's why I said I don't have any ill feeling to anyone. I left that place with absolute love and admiration of the people that I worked with. And I still slip sometimes and go, well, you know, I have this coworker. Well, it was a former coworker, you know, like.
Because you're used to that part of the identity still there.
Yeah. Well, Chuck gave me my, you know, he took a bet on me many years ago. And he hired me when I was, you know, out the door as an intern, and he hired me. So I got, you know, you never forget who gave you a shot.
I'll tell you why. Chuck was a really good boss for me. Mm-hmm. He was blunt and he was direct with me. And there were times where I would push and look to change or do something, and he would say yes, and there were times where it was a no.
Yeah.
But he was firm with me on where I stood, but I always felt like he respected me.
Yeah.
And so thank you for that, Chuck. I mean,
Thanks, Chuck.
We appreciate that. I'm not going to read this name. By the way, listeners, if you email me and you send me a long email and you do anonymous at the end, put that at the front. I made that mistake yesterday, and I apologize to any listener who sends me an email and then concludes with, please don't read my name. So caught myself there. Listener writes to say, when I've taken a strengths assessment, I have a tough time answering quickly. I'm so indecisive. How can I feel confident in the results?
So StrengthFinder is meant to get at your tendencies, like a lot of other assessments, and they're not personality tests per se, but so going with your gut instinct is really what's going to get at where your strengths are, because it's that innate ability that we're calling on, and it's baked in. So I wouldn't be too concerned about, you know, whether or not, you know, being decisive is going to get you the right responses. It's really based on innate response.
Okay. I was going to thank the listener by name. I'll just thank the listener anonymously. And in our last couple of minutes here, Mike Johansson, you know, knowing that everyone's circumstance is different, this is a question for the audience who could make a change or might feel like they have to eventually, but is feeling that consternation that comes with everything tied to it. What's the biggest lesson you've learned in the last 10 years?
Take the leap of faith. Seriously. And it's not just about this particular job, but even other things I've done since at RIT. I think if you trust yourself, if something sounds interesting, if something you think there's a possibility of it, something better coming from doing it, do it. I mean, something one of my grandparents used to say to me all the time was, what's the really worst thing that could happen? Mm-hmm. What's the worst that could happen? Okay, so it doesn't work out, find another job, go somewhere else. You know, And I say that to myself all the time. What's the worst that could happen? Don't worry about it. Things will work out. And you know, when you look back, your life, your path through life, the dots all connect. They connect perfectly. You didn't know at the time, but looking back, they connect perfectly.
That always happens on Connections when somebody bails, and we have got. But that's only because Megan Mack is producing the show. And
all
so
right.
I always think things are always going to work out, but it's just because Megan's running the show.
No,
deal.
You know that's right.
Norm Holland, in your last minute here.
Always bet on yourself, okay? Always. You know who told me that? Andrea Holland, my sister, who herself has been shown the door, okay, in her past, and has reinvented. I learned from her how to reinvent yourself, right? Always bet on yourself. Think about it. You know yourself. You know your own strengths. You know deep down inside that if you put your mind to something, you're going to accomplish it. I know that may sound perhaps oversimplistic, mm-hmm. But come on, you know yourself.
We love you and we love Andrea. And Kathleen Pringle, where can people learn more about the Kathleen Pringle Group?
A couple places, kathleenpringle.com, and they can also find me on LinkedIn, and there's lots of feedback on there so that people can learn about the diverse ways in which I've been able to support their careers. And if I could just say one more thing.
Yeah, please do.
I think that no matter... you know, your age, your industry, your bank balance. I think that pivoting is the crucial skill that you need to stay agile and to keep you moving forward.
Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Kathleen Pringle, premier career management strategist and coach at the Kathleen Pringle Group. And our thanks, of course, to our friend Norma Holland for telling her story. Thank you, Norma.
You're welcome, homie.
You got See? Some things never change.
We're like, it's like that.
Mm-hmm. Mike Johansson, who does such great work at RIT, they're lucky to have you there, and always nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, family.
All right, short break. More Connections coming up.